Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Goldstein. My attorney registration number is 24658. I requested oral arguments today because I believe the inconsistent verdicts rendered in this demand that Mr. Hemphill have a new trial. I think as lawyers, we sometimes view cases in a vacuum. I'd like to remind the court that my client has been incarcerated since 2005 on this case. When I was preparing today for oral arguments, I was reviewing the briefs that had been filed. I think it's clear that the jury verdicts coming back, finding Mr. Hemphill guilty of attempted sex assault as a pattern of abuse cannot stand. As People v. Day makes clear, a pattern of abuse shows or must show that there are two completed incidents of sex assault against the same victim. Clearly, an attempt does not support that. Because of those four verdicts from the jury, it calls into question the other guilty verdicts that they rendered. As I noted, the two victims, there were essentially four charges that mirrored each other for both victims. What's interesting is on, I believe it was February 16th, the morning of, the jury came back and wrote a question and said, what is a sex assault? And there was an argument and discussion back and forth between the lawyers and the court, what instructions should be referred to, should they be referred to any instructions. They were really questioning what the jury was asking them. So that prefaced actually then the court, and then subsequently the foreperson sent out a letter and said that we are firmly divided, and essentially said that they were 7-5. I do not believe they specified in which direction they were going, but they were fairly equally divided and had fairly strong opinions on the matter. In response, the court then issued the modified Allen instruction over defendant's objections. It's our position that that modified Allen instruction was inherently coercive given the statements of the jury foreperson, and ultimately, shortly thereafter, the jury came back with this compromised verdict. So based on viewing these issues in context with each other, I do not believe that consistent or inconsistent verdicts can stand.
Ms. Goldstein, could I back up a sentence or two? Your statement that the modified instruction was inherently coercive. I think you conceded in your brief that it essentially tracked the language of the prescribed language for such an instruction. So tell me why it was nevertheless inherently coercive.
Well, I believe the reason that I feel it was inherently coercive, Judge, is the fact that the court was already in receipt of the letter from the court foreperson that said, we have these strongly held, firmly held opinions, we're divided 7-5. In other words, that was telling the court that we do not believe that further deliberations would be helpful or useful.
So is it your position that such an instruction would necessarily be inherently coercive faced with the 7-5 split?
Well, not only that, but the fact that the foreperson specifically told the court that this is where we're at. We've already had these deliberations. So they'd already deliberated for part of the afternoon and come back the second day, so this was the morning of, then the court gave the modified Allen instruction, and shortly thereafter we have this nonsensical jury verdict where he's convicted of attempt as a part of a pattern, which is nonsensical. Now, clearly they did not have the benefit of Day, Tillery, Simon, but I think it's pretty clear when you read the district attorney, what he argued during his closing arguments, that he was confused as to what was needed to establish a pattern. And I think that is reflected in the earlier jury questions about what is a sex assault, and then they came back with the fact of a compromised verdict, which was finding an attempted sex assault as part of a pattern.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Obviously, the Attorney General has pretty much conceded that the sentence enhancement has to be vacated because of the problem with the jury instructions and the verdict forms. I think the more difficult issue here, frankly, is whether we then order a conviction for attempted sexual assault to enter. And the reason I have one question I had for you.
Sure.
There were a lot of different assaults described here, or facts upon which the prosecutor was relying. Could a jury not find that as to some of these, there was a completed sexual assault, as to others, the defendant had merely attempted sexual assault, or is that not possible?
How I would answer that to begin with is the pattern listed several different incidents. Mm-hmm. The problem is the prosecutor and how it was charged did not charge each pattern incident as a separate offense. And so the pattern offenses are a sentence enhancer. They are not substantive counts. And so I don't think you just unenhance a sentence enhancer and then it becomes a substantive count. You don't get to have both.
Well, didn't that happen in Day, where the court ordered that the case be returned and judgment enter on the attempted sexual assault charge without the pattern enhancer?
I don't believe so, and I guess what I took away from Day is the court made it very clear that a sentence enhancer is not a substantive count. In fact, the purpose of the sentence enhancer is to punish a defendant more severely based on two or more discrete acts. So it's our position that the conflict and the contradiction between finding an attempted assault as part of a pattern is inherently inconsistent with finding that a guilt on the sex assault on a child or a position of trust.
So I want to come back to Judge Pope's question, which is, I also read the people's brief as saying the sentence enhancers have got to go. And so if you don't think it's an appropriate remedy to go back and have the court enter judgments on the attempt charges, what is the remedy that you would like us to impose if we were to agree with you on that issue?
The remedy is a new trial.
And tell me why it's a new trial.
I think it's clear that there are the difference between finding an attempt as part of a pattern is inconsistent with finding that a sex assault occurred. And I think, again, when you view my issues in context, in taken together and as a whole, it shows that the jury was very much conflicted about what type of verdict they should render, if any. And for lack of a better phrase, this verdict shows that they compromised. They split the baby, and I think it shows that half of them wanted to find guilt and the other half didn't want to find, and they kind of said, let's do attempt as part of a pattern. And it doesn't make any sense. And
but if you eliminate the pattern, why haven't then you eliminated the problem?
I don't think so, because I think what we're really seeing here is that the jury was conflicted and that this was an inconsistent verdict that cannot stand. So we would be asking the court to vacate the judgments of convictions in their entirety and to remand the case for a new trial. Thank you.
I have a question on the modified Allen instruction.
Yes.
Do I hear your argument to be that any time a jury sends in a note to the judge indicating that it is nearly evenly split, that it's improper to give a modified Allen instruction thereafter?
Well, I know the case law says that it's in the court's discretion. However, it's my position, when the court received information that the jury was split 7-5, and the second piece of information that we have firmly held feelings on this, on our positions, that it was error for the court, it was an abuse of discretion to give the modified Allen, because then what we have is, the result is a compromised verdict.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have a little over 4.5 minutes for any rebuttal you would like.
May it please the court, counsel, Paul Kaler, 19210 for the people here. I think I need to make a further concession concerning the pattern of abuse count. I know, hold on to your hats. I was looking at the jury instructions and the verdict forms, and as the court knows, it's normally in a sexual assault on a child case, you have the lead count, sexual assault on a child, and then if you have pattern counts, you have special findings of fact under each charge fact, and then you have your position of trust, special finding. They didn't do that with these verdict forms. Instead, they had all the subparts of the pattern count pushed up under the main jury instructions. And the way the trial court, it was the prosecutor's problem, really. If you look at A, B, C, and D, after each one, there's a colon. And after the last one, there's an and. So the prosecution, the way the jury instructions are set up, the prosecution set itself to almost an impossible task of not only charging the main sexual assault on the child count, but proving all five additional findings for the pattern counts beyond reasonable doubt. If one were to guess, and I don't like guessing about what jury's thinking, I think they probably had a problem of finding all four subparts found beyond reasonable doubt. I think there's also possibly a jury unanimity instruction, since we don't have any findings concerning which ones were found beyond a reasonable doubt or which one constituted an attempt. So I think probably the best way to do that is just to get rid of, as not only what we, the pattern of abuse sentence enhancer thing, that we, the count that we set forth in our answer brief, but also not even to worry about resentencing on an attempted sexual assault on that, because we don't know which acts, could be all, could be one, could be two, but we can't really tell which acts the jury found beyond reasonable doubt constituted any sort of remaining attempted sexual assault on a child.
So this is just unclear. This is a step beyond your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, because we talked about saving an attempt count, but just because there were four separate acts charged, and we don't have any sort of special verdict findings concerning which acts could be all, and I would think under my theory of preserving an attempt count conviction, I think all of them would have to be, at least the jury would have to agree at least one of those constituted them. Or it could have been all two or three or all four, but we don't know that. I think it's easier just to get rid of the jury's findings under count two, count four, count six, and count eight.
And so when you say get rid of, you mean vacate those convictions and the sentences imposed under those convictions.
And then we're left with counts 1 and 5, which are the unenhanced sexual assault on a child counts, and then counts 3 and 7, which are the position of trust counts. And I don't think so. I think that's the cleanest way of doing that, so that we don't have any worries on later on about special unanimity instructions and all that kind of stuff. I think that's the cleanest way to packages case.
So let me ask a question about that.
Yes, sir.
So if we did that, and assuming that we found no other errors as alleged by the defendant, and I don't mean to prejudge that.
Of course.
Is there any need for resentencing then on the counts that stand, because the court may have exercised its discretion differently if it had only those counts rather than including all the attempt counts as well? And I know that obviously hasn't been argued by either side because of your new concession, but I'm just curious about that.
The court could easily send it back. The trial court, you know, from sentencing, ordered the counts as to each child to run concurrently. So I think ultimately the exact same sentence will be imposed. And in the trial court sentencing findings, there was a basis sentence not only on the acts that were done against two victims here, but also based on the defendant's criminal history. So if the court wanted to send it back for resentencing or just to reconsider the sentence in light of the vacating of the four counts, I don't think that would be a big problem. I strongly suspect that the same sentence would be imposed.
Thank you.
I think it's a subverts. I'll touch on that briefly. It's been one of my babies over the years since Fry from ages and ages ago. The case doesn't fall under either one of the exceptions. Either the statutory exception where a defendant is charged with both commission of an offense and a conspiracy to commit the offense, where the only evidence of conspiracy is the evidence of the commission of the offense, and then the jury comes back with a verdict convicting on conspiracy and acquitting on the actual commission of the offense. We don't have the statutory exception, so that here in this case, so that's out. The other situation has to do with what I call footnote 13 from Fry, situation where the jury makes findings that just cannot possibly be true. I think the clearest example from footnote 13 is where the jury convicts a defendant in one count of concerning the exact same quantity of marijuana of both, in one count convicting him of importing it into the United States, and the other count of the exact same quantity of acquiring it domestically. A defendant can both import it and grow it here simultaneously, and so the one count gets knocked out. I don't think we have that situation here. As the court knows from Fry and the U.S. Supreme Court cases, you know, courts just don't care. Verdict consistency is not necessary. It could have been a mistake. It could have been an act of leniency. And even if it was a mistake, it could be a mistake that was to the defendant's benefit or an act of leniency towards the defendant's benefit. There's just no way of knowing. Therefore, courts outside the two specific exceptions don't care.
In case of true inconsistent verdicts, you know, like the two Fry situations you described, is the remedy to vacate the judgment of conviction entirely, or only to vacate the judgments on those verdicts that are somehow not consistent with?
It doesn't say what to do in Fry. And I don't even, and Fry takes it from another footnote in the U.S. Supreme Court case, which is flown out of my head. I think using our normal procedure of maximizing jury verdicts, you would keep the conviction on the greater count, vacate the conviction on the lesser count. Concerning the modified element instruction, I think the situation in this case is what the situation all trial courts are always faced with when they decide whether or not to give a modified element instruction. The jury sends back a note saying, we're having problems arriving at a verdict. Sometimes there are vote counts, sometimes there are not. It doesn't really matter as long as the trial court gives a non-coercive modified element instruction, and as the court's already indicated, that was done here. The language here closely tracks, if not exactly follows, the authorized language for this kind of dealing with this kind of situation. I don't have anything else really. I've got a few more minutes. If the court has any other concerns about the case that I could try and address. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. Ms. Goldstein, you have 4 minutes and 34 seconds.
I would like to conclude by saying that I do believe the appropriate remedy for these inconsistent verdicts is to remand the case for a new trial, vacate the judgment of convictions in all counts. Sure, it'd be nice and sweet and easy just to vacate the convictions for attempted sex assault as a pattern of abuse and leave the other verdicts standing, but that ignores really what happened in trial. I would leave the court with this quote from People v. Fry: The government must convince the jury with its proof and must also satisfy the courts that, given this proof, the jury could rationally have reached a verdict of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't see how anyone could look at the verdicts that were rendered in Mr. Hemphill's case and not reach the conclusion that it was a compromised verdict. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your helpful, very candid arguments. We appreciate that. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course.